I want to say something that's weird to say, and I hope that your, you know, podcast listeners understand this. This year, instead of saying, here are the top 10 trends, I want to say the top 9 trends are all the same. And then maybe Built-to-Rent comes in at a distant number 10. The first 9 trends are all the same. They're tokenization. So, you know, I'll give you a little bit of a background of why this is such a gigantic thing. So step back for a second, look at 2021 and say, what was the biggest trend of all in 2021? Not in real estate, not even in money. What was the biggest trend on planet Earth, right? And there's only one answer. It was cryptocurrency, right? So we saw what happened. We've got an extraordinarily high level of engagement from the common man and an extraordinarily high level of engagement from the institutionals.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I can't tell you how absolutely thrilled I am to introduce our guest for the day, Neil Bawa. Neil, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Sujatha. It's fun to be here.
Absolutely. Well, you guys don't know who Neil Bawa is. He is just a legend in this space. He speaks at so many different conferences. He's an amazing thought leader when it comes to market trends in the real estate space and doing deals. And really excited to hear from him today. Neil, why don't you start us off by sharing a bit about, you know, who you are, what you do, and what you think is interesting in the space right now?
Absolutely. So I am a technologist, you know, dork, nerd, geek, whatever you want to call me. I come out of Silicon Valley. So I firmly believe in things like data analytics and big data and all of the sort of trends that happen there. The people that follow me are nerds, geeks, and dorks that really like the analytics that we put out. There's about 50,000 people roughly that follow the annual analytics that we put out. About 20,000 of them come to our webinars. And all of these webinars are really about the use of data, to spot trends at least 6 to 12 months before they are visible to the public. And that's what we do. So Silicon Valley was really a great place for us to start. Fairly large database. We are both a real estate value-add syndicator and a developer. Portfolio is in the $900 million range. So we're trying to put that an extra million, $100 million this year so we can get to that billion-dollar mark. Roughly 800 current investors are invested and about 12,000 are registered on our platform. Many of them have not invested with us because we tend to have fairly high minimums. But we're going to change that this year with something I want to talk about later in this podcast called tokenization. But in the meantime, we follow the data everywhere. So, you know, you'll find that there's people on your podcast that have, you know, $500 million portfolios that are in one city or in one state. Well, we are in 17, you know, cities in the US, in 10 states, because we're following the data. As we follow the data, we've noticed that there is no such thing as a perfect state or a perfect city. They change all the time. Cities go up and down in their process. And that's a lot of the data that we publish. We talk about cities, we talk about towns, we talk about the trends that are driving them upwards and downwards. We talk about cap rates and interest rates. And so that's what I like to do. I love reading the tea leaves. And obviously there's a big company benefiting from that and investors making lots of money. But what really excites me is reading those tea leaves and being right. And I've been wrong a number of times as well. So all of that is documented in other podcasts. I think there's 120 podcasts that I've been on. So it's nice to be able to put yourself out there, say something, and hopefully you get it right more often than you get it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the predictions that you have out there, you know, 6 or 12 months ahead of where we are today, which is, by the way, January 18th, 2022?
Okay, well, I'll start off with, you know, something that I think your audience will feel very connected to. So, you know, when you look at multifamily prices, they are really tied to two things. So one is the rents, which tend to drive up the net operating income. And the other one is the cap rate or the capitalization rate, which is this arbitrary number that the industry uses. They want to take all of the lending out because different people get lending at different, you know, times at different levels. So they're like, what if we paid for this property in cash? What would it, you know, give us? And that basically leads to this number called the cap rate. And so in each year, people ask us about, you know, where do you see the rents going and where do you see the cap rates going? Remember, with a cap rate, in case you don't know, a lower cap rate means a higher price. So if the cap rates compress or go down by 20%, then the price of the property goes up by 20%, even without its rents going up. So to us, 2022, unless there's a black swan event of the type that we saw in 2020, is actually going to be a really good year. 2021 was the greatest year that the multifamily industry has ever experienced. This was primarily because both of those things simultaneously had their greatest, best year ever. So cap rate compression, which led to price increases, was the greatest in history in a 12-month period. And rent increases were the greatest in history in a 12-month period. Rents increased by about 13%. Harder to say how much cap rates compressed, but they appear to have compressed in multifamily by at least half a cap. Industrial was very similar, about half a cap. Now, you might say, half a cap doesn't sound like much, right? So let me put it another way. Without a price increase, without a rental increase, let's say rents didn't increase at all in a year, half a cap means your property value goes up by 10, 15%, right? Somewhere in that range, 15%. And you might say, well, it's only 15%. Yes, but you use leverage. Your investors only put in about 30% of the money. So by the market moving 15%, they were halfway to their doubling their money goal in a single year without an increase in rents. Right. So that is an absolutely stunning, a shocking occurrence. We are projecting that it absolutely will not get repeated in 2022. So 2022, we're projecting slight cap compression. Last year, we saw absurd cap compression. This year, we're projecting slight cap compression. And we are projecting that that will happen despite the fact that we are now projecting, and this is new, this is the first podcast where I've updated this number, we are no longer projecting the Fed increasing interest rates three times in 2022. We're now projecting that the Fed will increase interest rates four times. They will actually increase that in each Fed meeting. So the March meeting, March, June, you know, October and December are all likely to be quarter point increases. So a 1% overall interest rate increase, so pretty fast. By any standard, but we still believe that cap rates will compress. And the reason for that is the amount of money that we printed in COVID is such an enormous amount that it is creating an astonishing chase for any kind of yield, with multifamily being the preferred asset class because it performed the best during COVID compared to, let's say, office, which performed poorly, or hotels, which performed even more poorly. So as a result, the flight to multifamily is so intense, and we're tracking those numbers. They are almost too large to say. In the end, you know, if there's a very large amount of money going into a certain space, its prices will go up, even if interest rates are going up. So we are showing a rising interest rate environment this year, but we are showing a cap compression. Now, on the rent side, they do benefit from inflation. So we are, you know, inflation came in at 7% a week ago, and it was in the sixes the last three times the Fed published inflation. And so when we're looking at those numbers, we think that rent increases, while not as outrageously spectacular as last year, 12.5%, should be in the 5 to 6% range, which will keep the other side, the net operating income, looking pretty healthy for those that have already purchased properties. For those that are buying now, well, I wish you the best luck because you are buying properties at an astonishingly low price. So we hope for your sake that the rents continue to go up at least 6%, 7%. You're going to need that to make any kind of money for your investors. So we think that's kind of the overall, the big three that we like to project at the beginning of the year. Interest rates up four times, cap rates for multifamily down a bit, which means prices up a bit, and then significant rent growth just not matching last year's astronomical record-breaking levels.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's an amazing summary. And yeah, it really speaks to the moment that we are at
right now. And just before we go on to, you know, the main subject of today, can you just speak a little bit as to some of the other asset classes that you haven't yet mentioned, like, you know, storage, industrial, senior housing, et cetera, mobile home?
So I love talking about these other asset classes, and not enough podcasters ask me about them. So thank you for that. So industrial, clearly still the most preferred asset class, benefiting directly from the e-commerce boom. It's slowing down a little bit because we have seen a plateauing of e-commerce to a new level. So it went up like in basically almost COVID-like exponential growth in the first 6 months of COVID, and then sort of flatline, and there's been a little bit of a dip, but it's not going back to its pre-COVID level. So it's significantly higher. And there's a very direct and immediate correlation between e-commerce growth in the United States and the amount of warehousing and logistics space. So industrial benefiting, you know, substantially. It performed really well during the pandemic, continues to perform well from a rent growth perspective. So we continue to see cap rates compress there. So I think the story there for industrial is going to be fairly similar to multifamily, especially because for the first time since I've been tracking statistics in a very long time, industrial occupancy rates are now phenomenal. They're in the high 90s, which is something that really doesn't ever happen for industrial space. They tend to be in the high 80s or low 90s. So to see these kinds of occupancy trends for industrial means this is a secular trend that's going to continue. So I think industrial really well for this next year, though it's a little bubbly. So, you know, watch out for new construction going on the industrial side. It's much easier to build industrial than it is to build multifamily. So it's much easier, you know, tilt-top construction. We're building, and we're definitely building industrial much faster than we are multifamily. The other asset class, storage, did really well through the recession. It wasn't forecasted to do well, but did well because there was a huge amount of churn. People moved. So there was, you know, a massive move of people. When people move, they need storage facilities to put their stuff in. So it remains to be seen how it's going to do this year. So I think it's going to come back down to earth a little bit, but so far has performed really well. So I'll say flat with slightly rising rents because of inflation, but not much of a cap rate move. It did see a cap rate compression happening last year for storage. Office, that's kind of my big prediction. I'm really hanging myself out here. We didn't really see a debacle in the office market because most people don't understand. A lot of people think multifamily, they think annual leases. Most office leases are 5 to 10 years. And most companies are not willing to destroy their credit by defaulting on leases, especially because the economy bounced back so quickly, right, from COVID, right? We went down 33% and then up back 33% the following quarter. So companies they didn't really have time to start defaulting on their leases. They might have been a few months behind and the economy recovered and they started to pay again. So I think office is the biggest debacle that comes out of COVID. But I think it is also a slow motion debacle because every year, only about 8-9% of all office leases, maybe a little more, 12-13%, come up for renewal. And so we're seeing significant alarm at the renewal rate of office leases being very low compared to what it was historically. So we think that this asset class has been the most favored one in the long run. If you look at the last 20 years, multifamily wasn't the most favored asset class. It was office. It was also the largest asset class. It was bigger than multifamily, and then multifamily passed it a couple of years ago, right before COVID. But when we look at that asset class, that's what investors wanted. Why? Because they're like, why would I have to deal with like 200 people and who only have $400 in the bank? I don't want to chase them. I don't want gunshots. I want to deal with high quality companies. I want to have a big skyscraper with only 6 clients. Now, all of that, you can tell why people loved office more than they loved multifamily. But what we are seeing in the last 18 months is that those same people are saying, I want to get into multifamily. Those same people are saying, I want to get into industrial. So we are seeing large outflows of capital, especially venture capital, from the office space out. And so it's a double whammy. They're losing capital, which is moving to other asset classes. And as the new leases come up for renewal, some of those renewals are not happening. And some of those renewals are for smaller amounts of space because companies are simply not sure. Nobody knows how hybrid work is going to pan out into the future. But keep in mind that if only 10% of the office going white collar workers end up working from home, that would be devastating for the office industry. 10% is a gigantic number. 10% is hundreds of millions of square feet of office that's no longer necessary. So I think it's a total debacle. I think it's worse than retail, but it's very slow moving. So they've got time to adjust and you know, and work their way through it. But I think you're going to see some real problems in the office space. And then retail has been much better than I projected. So there hasn't been a meltdown in the retail space. That the, you know, retail space has adjusted. Retail numbers are up significantly. So retail's doing okay. It's doing okay. We still think that there's a large number of restaurants that are going out of business that may not come back. So overall, I think retail will end up a bit smaller than it was pre-COVID. But the concerns about there being a full-on meltdown 2008 style have not materialized. And I'm grateful for that, for one. But it was certainly that something that I talked about last year that hasn't proven to be right. I felt like by now there would be some fire sales happening. I don't see any evidence of those fire sales. And I think a lot of that is because of the incredibly large amount of money in the economy. When you have to chase assets, money chases all kinds of assets. So it's also chasing retail. And also the retail providers, especially the large malls, have pivoted from just doing malls to doing malls with apartments. And that has significantly improved their business model because now they have, you know, 1,000 consumers above each mall that can give them money. And that has made a significant difference to the overall space. So I think that office is, in the long run, could be a bigger loser from COVID than the retail market is. So those are some of the other ones that we follow. Senior housing is one that's interesting to me. At the same time, it's a little, I'm a little careful because their occupancy, most people, there's this perception that like senior housing must be at 100% occupancy because the baby boomers are retiring. It's a nonsensical idea. Anyone can spend 30 seconds on Google and type in senior housing occupancy levels, and you'll notice it's been declining for about 6 years. It's now in the low, in the mid-80s. There's also a lot of delinquency in that space. So for the moment, the impact because of COVID is spectacular. It's very strong. But we do know that there's greater needs, you know, each year as the baby boomers turn 65 and they go, you know, they're only going in one direction. So we think that that industry has a lot of room. But for the moment, it's a very, very rocky place to be.
Interesting. Just because the occupancy levels have been, it's not
declining for a long time because, you know, a lot of states were allowing, you know, skilled nurse facilities and doing this thing where, you know, if you have a 5-bedroom single family home, you can have 5, you know, people there. So at the bottom level, there were a lot of people opening these small facilities that are basically assisted living facilities. And so that was creating a huge amount of inventory as everybody kept saying, you know, baby boomers are getting older, blah, blah, blah. So they've had a very significant amount of inventory being pumped in both from the big box, you know, 300 unit, you know, kind senior facilities, as well as these lots of people doing 4, 5, 6 bed, you know, single family homes and turning them into assisted living facilities. So there's been a real problem in that space that the public is not aware of.
Interesting. Okay. Awesome. So now let's talk about the elephant in the room. Thank you for that overview of, like, you know, several different asset classes. And let's talk about the big trend that you want to talk about this year. Yeah, lay it out there for us.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Well, like, you know, I don't know what word to use. You know, with trends, I talk each year about the top 2 or 3 things. Last year, unquestionably, the biggest trend last year was built to rent. It's still number 2 this year. But it's almost like I want to say something that's weird to say, and I hope that your you know, podcast listeners understand this. This year, instead of saying, here are the top 10 trends, I want to say the top 9 trends are all the same. And then maybe built to rent comes in at a distant number 10. The first 9 trends are all the same. They're tokenization. So, you know, I'll give you a little bit of a background of why this is such a gigantic thing. So step back for a second, look at 2021 and say, what was the biggest trend of all in 2021? Not in real estate, not even in money. What was the biggest trend on planet Earth, right? And there's only one answer. It was cryptocurrency, right? So we saw what happened. we've got an extraordinarily high level of engagement from the common man and an extraordinarily high level of engagement from the institutionals, all happening in 2021. Adoption across the board in more than 100 countries was spectacular. I hear information about 20+% of Americans playing with crypto and you know, opening wallets. I hear 50% of Dubaians have crypto wallets. And now I hear every institutional player, I hear, you know, the celebrity hosts on TV, you know, talking about, you know, a large portion of their money going to crypto. So it's unquestionable that both from the perspective of dollars and from the perspective of perception and buzz, crypto was the largest, you know, trend on planet Earth. And why am I talking about this? Because it's not a real estate trend. But what's really happening is this: the amount of money that venture capital is spending on any kind of crypto startup is just fantastic. The information is out there. Look at the numbers, and it's going to make your eyes just pop out of your head because they are enormous numbers. There's thousands, not hundreds, but thousands of different kinds of crypto startups. And now there's dozens of them that are looking to do what they successfully did with crypto, which is 1 million coins, including dog coins and cat coins. And, you know, all these things are successful. Why is dog coin worth $21 billion? Nobody has any freaking clue, but it's worth $21 billion because people keep buying it, right? You know, just because Elon Musk tweeted about it for a while back. But that's the power of buzz, right? Everything goes up. The problem is dog coin doesn't have any backing. There's no asset, right? What if you could take the biggest Achilles heel of every cryptocurrency in the world, except for stable coins, which are backed by the US dollar? What if you could take real estate and you could tokenize it and turn it into a coin, into a crypto coin? It would be backed by that real estate, right? So if crypto can be the biggest trend on planet Earth with nothing backing it, except a bunch of people thinking it's going to go up, imagine if you could take real estate, which has been going up for the last, you know, 20 years, bar 2008, 2009, and you combine those two. Wouldn't that be insanely powerful? Wouldn't that be much more powerful than crypto is today? Most people think so. That is why there are about 100+ startups, an army of them, a gigantic juggernaut of them, that are about to smash into the worldwide real estate market. Last year, they did it in Europe. So Europe is much further ahead in the real estate crypto revolution than the United States is. Most of the vendors that we speak to today, we have to get up early in the morning and have meetings at 6 a.m. because it's, you know, 8 o'clock, it's 6 or 4 p.m. their time. So when you look at who are the world leaders in taking real estate and tokenizing it so people can buy $50 segments of a real estate property that Sujata has bought. So Sujata buys a $10 million real estate property. She raises $3 million in equity, and then she tokenizes that equity the next day. And so now investors, they can obviously, you know, they have access to that asset. So they still own the asset, but now they have tokens, which could go up in value on their own, and they can sell them on secondary platforms such as T0 throughout throughout the world. That happened in Europe. It happened. People successfully tokenized hotels. People successfully tokenized multifamily properties. People successfully tokenized drug rehab centers. And now that massive tsunami of hundreds of startups is smashing into the United States. So I'm going to name some companies, and you don't know these companies today, but I guarantee you're going to know at least one or two of these companies, every single person, in 2 years, because I don't know which one of these are going to succeed. How could I know, right? I do know that some of them are going to become the next Airbnb, right? Or equivalent, because what they're doing is they're enabling us to fractionalize real estate. They're enabling people to do something that has never been done in real estate. Sujata goes to a, you know, you go and you're having an evening session with your friends, you're in a party, and somebody says today, hey, there's this hot stock. I think it's going to double in 20 minutes. So Jatha pulls out her phone, goes to E-Trade or Robinhood, tap, 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 and she buys $1,000 worth of that because she's like, I trust my friend. Well, if that friend happens to be Neil Bawa, and Neil Bawa says, Idaho Falls is the best place in the U.S. to invest in, which I believe so, by the way. I only have one project there, so it's like a tiny portion of my portfolio, very tiny, but I still do believe that that's the case. So Today, there's nothing that you can do. Like, because, you know, you've got your own fish that you're frying. The last thing you're going to do is get into a plane and spend the next 4 months building relationships there and making offers and doing anything with it. But in 3 years, I guarantee you will have a bunch of apps, maybe not one, maybe two, maybe three on your phone. You'll go there and you'll tap and you'll select Idaho Falls. And then you'll say, I could invest. I could buy a bunch of tokens in this multifamily, that retail center, that hospital, this hotel. And just be able to buy real estate the way that you purchase stock today, the way that you purchase stock in the last 10 or 15 years. That is happening. It happened in Europe last year. It's happening in the US, and it's bigger. So to me, it isn't a tsunami. It's 10 tsunamis together, because nothing like this has ever hit the world real estate market.
For sure. Yeah. Just removing that friction that, you know, we have to go through when we're getting our deals funded, and to be able to do that just with the click of a few buttons, is that would be absolutely, I mean, can you just help us understand, you know, maybe in a numerical terms, like how that might shift the syndication space with which you and I are both in?
So initially it's helpful in the next 3 to 5 years, it'll be helpful in two different ways. But in the long run, I think it's going to be devastating to the syndicator, not to the buyer, not to the investor. I think the investor wins here, right? Because at any circumstance where the investor has more intelligence, more ability, more direct access to product, they win. There's no doubt, because that's the free market at work. But what happens to the syndicators? Well, the first two steps of this are going to be really good for us. And the second, third step is going to be really bad. The first step is, you will truly be able to, within the next year or two, take a raise that you just did. Maybe you raised $3 million for a $10 million property and offer to your investors, hey, we'd like to tokenize this, no cost to you. You don't have to do it if you don't want to, but you can tokenize if you wish. And we're going to put that token on T0, right? Because T0 is currently the number one exchange for real estate tokens. You might say, really, this place exists? Yes. Google T0. Go there. Buy a bunch of tokens right now in the next hour, just to kind of tell yourself that this is real, right? You can buy tokens for single family and multifamily and hotels or all kinds of stuff. It's there. It's happening. It just hasn't exploded into the public consciousness like it did in Europe last year. It's this year for the US, right? And now you might say, well, how am I, Sujatha, going to do that? I don't know how. And the first thing about blockchain, cryptocurrency, I don't know anything about, you know, all of the technological and legal aspects of this. I'm just a syndicator. I raise money from individual investors. And the answer is, remember those dozens of startups, right? They're going to do it for you. So most of us that are in this space today as syndicators have high quality software that we put our investors in, and, you know, all of their investments are managed there, and K-1s and all kinds of stuff, right? That technology exists. So why wouldn't there be equivalent technology that exists for managing people's tokens on the blockchain and doing it safely and securely and preventing them from, you know, having fraud? All those companies exist. I'm going to give you some names, right? And I don't know which one of these is going to win. I have my opinions. So there's BlockSquare, Vertalo, there's Stobox, there's DigiShares. Okay. So those are four that are all trying to do the same thing. They're trying to convince Sujatha to take her brandly, newly minted property for which she's already found investors and tokenize it. So how does that help Sujatha, right? Well, now that there's all these vendors, you can go do these things. You can tell your investors with a straight face that you have liquidity, because once, you know, there's an investor who needs money, he's going to go on to this secondary, you know, a platform like T0. So these vendors that I just mentioned, they're not going to sell those tokens. Their job is to make sure that the right number of tokens are created in the right legal way, right transaction, right value. Then those tokens can be hosted on a marketplace such as T0, right? And then in the future, it's going to be hosted on other places as well, such as the big, you know, places like Coinbase, which right now, obviously, they host coins, right? So you can go and buy Ethereum or Bitcoin at Coinbase. But I think that 2 years from now, you'll be able to buy some of the big real estate tokens that you can buy today. But for the moment, there's all these smaller marketplaces like T0 that are hosting real estate tokens, and you can go there and buy these real estate tokens. Once somebody, anybody in the real world buys these tokens, you can with a straight face say, for this project and that project, we have true liquidity. Real estate becomes a liquid asset. So that is your first and most immediate benefit. Your second benefit is that just like today there's crowdfunding out there, and crowdfunding, you know, was predicted to take down syndicators, and it's been anything but that. In fact, it's been an enabler for us because it's created a much larger market of investors that now invest in crowdfunding platforms and in our projects, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So now these crowdfunding platforms are all going, I can tokenize, right? And there's two kinds of crowdfunding platforms, the ones that are trying to tokenize their own projects and the ones that are trying to tokenize Sujata's token, right? So they're not the ones doing the token work. They're not the ones doing the legal work. They're like, I'm going to build a marketplace. And Sujata is going to go to Vertalo or Stobox or DigiShares and build her own token. And then she can stick it on my platform and I can charge fees to sell and buy because I've got all these millions of investors. And now instead of those investors just investing in my syndications on my crowdfunding platform, they can keep investing in those syndications, 50,000, 100,000 each, or they can buy $50 tokens, which I'm also hosting. And I'm going to still make money from Sujata because, you know, she wants to raise money. So in this second scenario, you've already got the liquidity. So that's awesome. In the second scenario, instead of raising 3 million, you only raised 2.5 million and you closed on the property because, you know, there's fees and all the other stuff. And you're like, oh my God, I'm having trouble raising this last 500K. So you go on to those crowdfunding portals. You've already created the coin, the Sujata coin or the property name coin. And now you're basically saying, you know, so you go to the coin vendor, you create the coin, then you go to the marketplace and you say, I'm going to host this. And the moment you host that, you're going beyond liquidity. You're going to equity. Your second benefit is that you receive access to equity that you didn't have access to before, right? And those people, once they know you, who knows, you become a brand with them. The next time they'll come directly to you. You know, at some point you're going to have their contact information so you can sell to them directly in the future place, right? So that's your second benefit, right? So I want to pause here for a moment before I give you the bad side of the story, but those are the two big changes coming to the syndicator world.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's just so prescient and also just, I'm very much waiting for the ball to drop, right? Because it seems like easier liquidity, like more being able to have those real estate investments be liquid, which is a huge benefit both to syndicators, because that's one thing that, you know, our investors want. And so it will make it much more interesting for them to invest in syndications if they know that it's a liquid asset. And then number two, you know, to be able to expand your investor base by being able to host these coins and potentially get introduced to more investors is also an amazing. And, you know, there still has to be someone who's buying properties, right? And renovating them and putting them.
Yes. So investors, you know, we don't go out of business because what we do, the work of purchasing properties, improving them, or in my case, also building them, right? So 70% of my database is new construction. You might say, why? Given that, you know, I come from the multifamily value add world like you. And the answer is today, a Class C property under 4 cap, Class B under 4 cap, Class A under 4 cap. So the cap rate differences between older and newer properties have just vanished. So why not just build a brand new property and sell it at a lower price, right? So I'm a little bit afraid of what people are, you know, paying for, you know, 50-year-old properties. I think that they're overpaying. So it makes sense for me to just, you know, spend my time doing new construction, basically selling assets to those that want higher quality assets rather than buying Class C at, you know, sub 4 cap.
And we have a shortage of housing, so we need more housing built.
Absolutely, especially in the build-to-rent space, which is far more powerful going forward than apartments. I mean, that's my big trend of last year.
Before you go ahead and tell us, like, the, you know, where syndicators are, you know, where we're going to fall flat, but will you first, just for listeners who aren't familiar with build-to-rent, just go over what that is?
Absolutely. So build-to-rent is simply a new asset class formed around 2015, which focuses on giving people single family homes or townhomes for rent. Traditionally, anyone that was building rental real estate built apartments. Over 99% of all of the stock built in the US in the last 30 years is apartments of some sort with a sprinkling of townhomes here for variety. But today, the vast majority of new construction money that is going into the US, especially institutional, especially smart money, is going into an asset class that is different, but related to multifamily. It's still real estate for rental, but they're now building single family homes or townhomes. So obviously single family homes are going to be more expensive, and they're building them to be much smaller. a typical single family home in the US was around 2,000 square feet. A typical build for rent single family home is under 1,000 square feet, so 900 square feet. So it's not any bigger than an apartment, but it has a postage stamp sized front yard and a postage stamp sized backyard, no neighbors. And it's a completely different feel. People are living in those like it's their final home. So the churn is very low. An apartment loses tenants roughly every 20 months. That's the nationwide average. It's more than double that for built to rent. So as a space, it's far more profitable and far more stable than apartments are. And apartments are already an incredible space. So all the smart money, $76 billion of it at last count in the last 18 months, is going into building, you know, built to rent space. And I think what will happen and what is about to happen, and I'll predict it, is that built to rent will merge with the tokenization space because it's much easier to tokenize brand new assets. You haven't built them yet. You need the equity. You need the capital. It's much easier to buy a token on a brand new property because when you're buying the token, you're like, oh, I know exactly what this looks like. It's also much easier to sell that kind of attractive, good-looking product outside the US because here's the one of the best things that I'll say on this podcast for syndicators. In the US, you're still stuck with accredited investor verification, at least for now. Right? Outside the US, no such restrictions.
Right. Very, very good point. So, and then with build to rent, people are renting instead of buying because is that an affordability issue or why are people choosing to rent those townhouses?
Yeah, come on. And last year, home prices in the United States went up by the highest, you know, amount in history, and especially places where people want to live, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, Jacksonville, you know, Nashville, Phoenix, they're going up 30% a year. Nobody's salaries are going up 30% a year. So obviously, the percentage of the population that can continue to somehow magically keep up with these price increases and still be able to afford a home is shrinking. As that shrinks, you have all these people that have a significant amount of money. They're not poor. They have quite a bit of money in the bank, but they just don't have enough to qualify for ever more expensive single family homes. That group doesn't want to go to an apartment because that's a defeat for them. They were trying to buy a single family home. They went to a 50, you know, open houses and just didn't work in terms of dollars. And now they can't get a loan to the amount of the single family homes. So they don't want to admit defeat by moving into an apartment. So they move into a nice, newly built to rent space. So they don't have a 2000 square foot home. They have maybe something that's 1,000 square feet or 1,100 square feet, but they've still got the low density. They've still got the pools, the gyms. They've still got a backyard, a front yard. They can still have their poop, you know, their pet poop in the backyard without going out. So they have all of those benefits that you don't have with apartments and rents that are only about 50 cents per square foot higher than an apartment. 50 cents a square foot for 1,000 square feet is $500 a month. A lot of people are paying that extra $500 a month.
Yeah, for sure. To be in a single family house or a townhouse makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, thanks for going over that asset class. I think it does make a lot of sense. People are going to want that and it's doing very well already. So what's the bad news for syndicators?
The bad news is this. Technology tends to focus income at the top. So real estate, the reason why it produces more profit than the stock market on average, we all know this, we all say this, it's true, is because it's an illiquid asset class. It's because it's an asset class that requires a very substantial amount of work. And what the net effect of tokenization is going to be in the next 5 or 6 or 7 years is that tokenization is going to allow the most successful syndicators or the most, you know, the syndicators that know how to market themselves the best, access to a massively large audience of both accredited and non-accredited investors worldwide. And when that happens, essentially what is going to happen is they're going to become the buyers for 80 or 90% of the assets, making it very difficult for syndicators to compete because they would simply be outpricing all of us. In case you wonder if I have an example of this, I do. It's called the venture capital world. When the VC world was able to get money from all over the world, from the Saudi fund and the Norwegian fund, they started making investments into startups. And now we are seeing that all that money that we used to make 15 years ago when a startup went IPO and we bought their stock and then the stock went up and we made that money, that doesn't exist anymore. Because all the startups already were $3 billion before they hit an IPO level. So all the juice has been taken out by the venture capitals. And why are they doing it? Because they've got all the money. They've got the ability to both raise money through crowdfunding and raise money through institutionals. Essentially, they've tokenized startups and they've been able to do it because the stock market's liquid. The only thing stopping them from pushing us out of the marketplace is that real estate is illiquid and we're about to solve that problem. So what this means is that 5 to 10 years from now, either Sujatha is going to be one of those 5% of syndicators that scales, or she's going to be working probably for those 5%. So that's, you know, this is going to be one of those. And a lot of people are like, no, this is not going to happen to us. Well, if you're a grocery store 30 years ago, you didn't think that Walmart was going to happen to you. If you're an e-commerce website in 2005, you didn't think Amazon was going to happen to you. And if you were a travel agent in 1999, you didn't think that Expedia was going to happen to you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so, I mean, do you have any thoughts on like how people can adapt or what's going to happen to our space?
Well, initially, enjoy the party because liquidity also increases prices. Liquidity increases the number of people that can make an investment, which increases the prices. So enjoy the party. Liquidity is also going to, you know, give you the ability to create more equity. Good for you. It's going to give you, you know, all sorts of benefits. But understand that you can't get complacent because you have the same 3 or 4 years that you're going to enjoy all these benefits. Those are your 3 or 4 years to build up your base to the point, because at some point you'll find you simply can't buy these assets from anybody else because they're buying everything in the marketplace all at once and they're tokenizing it to everyone on the planet. And because they're tokenizing it, it works. I mean, I want to point something out to you. The US real estate market is an anomaly. We produce rental income. We produce real profit. Please take a look at any of the other industrialized nations in the world. Go to Switzerland, go to any of the Nordic states, go to Singapore, Hong Kong, London, Canada even. There's no cash flow anywhere else in the market. People only buy real estate for appreciation. And now we're about to bring those hundreds of millions of rich investors from outside the US, and they're about to invest in US real estate. And so the institutional buyers are going to say, I'm going to play anyway. And they're going to buy every asset at a lower price. You're going to have trouble because your investors, you've trained them over the last 10 years to expect cash flow. And when that cash flow doesn't really happen, it's going to create massive stresses in the system that you're going to have to figure out a solution for, right? I have 2 or 3 of my own solutions, but they're not general solutions. They're kind of specific purpose solutions for me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that is very interesting, you know, forward thinking. And it makes sense to, you know, we always, in every single industry and all business, you have to be kind of looking out for, you know, what's coming next and how to best prepare for it or change course, et cetera. So thanks for giving us.
Yeah. And that's what my company is doing. We understand that either we are going to become a alpha predator, right? So what's an alpha predator? A predator does not get attacked by anyone else because they're the largest, the biggest, the scariest. And so we have decided to become an alpha predator. So you will hear more about that in the next year as we move our company to a completely different level. We're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to tokenize existing projects. We just raised $70 million in a build-to-rent fund, and we're tokenizing all of it, all 70 million. That will, at that point of time, become the largest tokenized product in real estate in the world. So we have to move forward because at this point, staying where we are is not an option.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you so much, Neil, for coming on the show and just dropping so much interesting, you know, knowledge and trends, et cetera, that is really important for us to keep an eye out on and try to understand and wrap our head around so we can prepare. So thanks so much. Please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and your firm and anything else you want to share.
We share our real estate analytics and technology and trends on a website. It's called Multifamily, followed by the letter U. So multifamily, not Y-O-U, but the letter U, multifamilyu.com. We get about 20 to 30,000 people that register for the webinars each year. We're bringing in experts in the coming weeks on tokenization. We're bringing in an expert on demographics and how they're affecting the market, and we're also bringing in experts that are going to talk about the impact of interest rates. So you're welcome to come to multifamilyu.com and register. We don't have a product. We don't sell education. You'll simply be part of a group that comes to 20 to 22 webinars a year. And if the philosophy we employ there is interesting, you're welcome to then look at our investment offerings.
Awesome. Well, please check out Neil and his firm. Thank you so much, Neil, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, luxe-cap.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.